It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, the wild card edition. I'm Ben Ostro, and I'm joined by our Football Zebras crew. We have senior editor Mark Schultz and editor and podcast producer extraordinaire Chris Soibert. And we're going to first take a look at some of the things that jumped out in wild card weekend and in the semifinals of the Bowls. And so I'll start with you, Mark.
Well, one of the things that really jumped out to me was the continued progression of Adrian Hill as a referee. He came into the league for several years as a line judge and then a deep wing, and then he was promoted up to referee. He's always kind of been on the periphery of the playoffs, kind of last in, first out, alternate. Maybe some years not even making the playoff. But I noticed this year he really has come on, and he is carrying himself with great confidence, great conviction in his calls, and he's done a very good job leading his crew, and his calls have been good. Well, they're good enough for him to get a wild card assignment. And then he got one of the, at least on paper, and at least in all the marquees, the most heated wild card assignment between the Bears and the Packers. And it was heated. It was chippy. It didn't get out of control, but his crew was on it. He commanded a presence out on the field, and he did a very, very, very good job. So Adrian Hill, up. He's a veteran, but you can still say he's moving and advancing and maybe even an up-and-comer.
And, he's been doing very well. I've been keeping an eye on him, obviously, the progression from when he was promoted, and I've always been impressed with how he's run the show. And that's one of the things that's kind of weird is, you know, if you come across in a way that doesn't have a lot of confidence, and not to say that he wasn't, but I can sense it a lot more now. And it's amazing how much difference that has. It's like, you know, if you say it with authority, people will believe you. It's the same thing they said with Ben Dreith. They're like, when he said what it was, you believed it. Was that right? Well, I don't know, but he said it pretty loud and with conviction. So must be right. So, he's doing very well. And, you know, like you said, the wild card assignment we typically say is like your lower end assignment. That's not the case anymore when we have a 2 versus a 7. And as you said, you know, there was chippiness in the game, but for Bears, Packers, I wouldn't have even considered that chippy at all. And some of it is the players, but a lot of it is the crew and the alternates that were there to kind of keep order throughout the game. We don't want somebody leaving, you know, this game and potentially making an alteration to the flow of the game just on something that's kind of stupid. So that was good work by that crew to keep everything with a lid on it. Chris, what did you see this week?
Well, in a weekend of relatively no controversy or a low number of controversy, there was a amusing moment in the Chargers Patriots game when referee Ron Torbert had a little brain fart. He was attempting to signal delay of game, and he went through progression of you can see the gears turning. He kind of started with it looked like he was going to go for some sort of illegal shift signal, and then he actually signaled offside, and he actually said delay of game as he was signaling that. And then he clearly realized what was going on, where it's like, what am I doing? And you can see on his face, it's just a bemused look. And it was kind of a moment of lightheartedness, and it actually brought to light the outstanding announcing of Mike Tirico. Because again, we have praised him for a variety of reasons on the officiating front. And once again here, he just showed he was not smarmy as far as, boy, this referee doesn't know anything. You could actually hear Mike Tirico laugh and go, yeah, he was calling offside there. Clearly, he meant to call delay a game. And then he went into, of course, the accolades that, you know, Ron Torbert worked last year's Super Bowl and went through literally all the reasons why this is funny, because this is one of the top referees in the NFL. And he just had a brain fart at that point. And, you know, the Friday night folks that work, you know, we run into these issues sometimes too, especially on, you know, weird, like disconcerting acts or, you know, an illegal bat where you're like, what's the signal for that? And sometimes you make it up on the fly. And again, it's good to see that we're not the only ones sort of that go through this sometimes. Even Ron on a national stage makes that mistakes, and he could laugh at himself. And that was the best part of it all.
And yeah, and then when you go to Fridays and, you know, if you're lucky to have a microphone to support it, great. But if you don't, and you make the signal for something that's one of the more obscure signals, and then the announcer is like, huh? And then he starts announcing something and you're like, no, not that, this. And, you know, it becomes a bunch of semaphore almost without the flags there, trying to figure out how to get that communicated up to the public address announcer. But yeah, and that's one of the things. It's like, you know, you prep for these games. It's a big game. You know that you're on a primetime spotlight. There's a whole mess of things you're running through. You're running through your checklist before every snap and everything like that. I mean, the intensity is up a level. And then, you know, to miss the hand signal is like, it's pretty much kind of showing that, you know, they're really engaged on the big stuff there. And you know, so something like that just kind of creeps in there. And well, as you say, it humanizes it. And, you know, they're not the robots that everybody wants them to be and be correct 100.00% of the time. I'm just kind of taken by the fact that it was fairly quiet over the six games. Yeah, so we were running 8 live blogs in 5 days when you include the semifinal bowl games. If we want to add in the quarterfinal bowl games from the week prior, we really can say that it has been quiet on the playoff front, as it were. And that's not good for business for us, but, you know, it does give us a little bit of an ability to kind of talk about things and not in this shouting environment of things that didn't go right, went off, disadvantaged the team or whatnot. And we had actually a tale of two halves, and we'll kind of ease into our first topic there about the quiet of the officiating. But there was two parts that I did want to address from the Jaguars game, and both of them involved the end of the half. And in the first half, we had a hurry-up offense. We had a pass up over the middle with the clock running, not advisable, no timeouts. And, you know, that's the least advisable play to be running at that point. So with the clock running, Jaguars were able to get into, well, they were approaching the line. It looked like they were not lined up in time. Bills were offside. Flags flew. There was a conference. It went on for a while. We went through the top to bottom. And I mean, you got to make a decision in that case. You're like, you know, you got one shot at it. Did they make it to the line? Well, it looked like it from what they were looking at. They also were trying to look at all the other elements that were in there. We had the ability to watch it 2 or 3 times with the clock superimposed in our view. So, you know, we had a lot of help in trying to decipher this call. That was one shot in real speed. So I wasn't too disappointed with the fact that it was, you know, a couple of fractions of a second off from, you know, them being set. They weren't set in time, but they did wind up giving them another chance, and that's where it becomes a little bit problematic. Replay can't fix it either, because replay can only look at the fact that the ball was snapped with time on the clock. And so we ran this by on the blog on Sunday, but that was just one of the one little rough spot. But again, it was, you got to make a judgment call in those situations. The other one was at the end where they had the interception and there was some contact. And so, being that I'm in Duval County, I didn't find myself to be an unbiased juror. So I asked Chris Soibert to weigh in on that. So I have my feelings about it, you know, but everything is tainted in teal. So why don't you take the call at the end of the game where there was an interception? Was the receiver interfered with?
Yeah, I mean, I understand you have rose-colored glasses here, and this wasn't the typical sort of Jaguars collapse. So maybe that makes it more heartbreaking. I don't know. Again, my view, live, it was hard to tell, right? I mean, you have the game speed going on. The camera wasn't really focused on that defender, so it was hard to tell. If you look at the replays, you can clearly see that the defender has his hand on the, I guess it would be the inside hip of the receiver. So as we were discussing, has this drawn a flag before? Absolutely. But the bar to cross is meant to be, does that hand being there, is that a foul in and of itself? No, it's supposed to be, does that hand turn the receiver or restrict the receiver in some way from making a catch? And in my opinion, just watching it on replay, I did not see a turn. I did not see a restriction. I saw the defender reach across. He did not go through the back of the receiver. So there's that as well. And make the play to deflect the ball. And then obviously it was ultimately intercepted. Now, does the reaction of the wide receiver necessarily tell you something? Sometimes it does, because they will tell you if they think they were interfered with. And that receiver did not seem to argue or gesticulate in some way where he was like, oh my gosh, there should be a flag here. Is that a decision that you should necessarily take into account? No, but as far as it does give some credence to the story that it did not, he was not turned. And that was my opinion from outside of the state of Florida, but I'm sure others, I'm sure Jacksonville Jaguar fans have a different feeling.
Well, and I looked at what you had analyzed when you had texted it to me, and I was like, I had accepted it, and it was very well reasoned. And, you know, I just wanted to make sure. And as we really kind of said, there wasn't enough there. So again, you're looking for that material restriction. You know, there's bumping, there's any kind of contact coming on back and forth. But, you know, so you could say that it's restrictive in a way, but it's got to be material restriction, and it really wasn't there. And unfortunately, you know, that was the end of a pretty exciting season. And well, you know, the spring training for Jumbo Shrimp starts in 2 months. One thing I want to go to now is to take a look at, we looked at the games, but let's kind of look at the crews and how they compose them. And every year we run into this conversation, so we'll kind of address it, which is you don't have crews advancing as a whole unit to specific games. You do have, from time to time, you'll have three or four or five from the same crew working together, but they do get split up into different rounds from time to time, and they'll move officials around based on how well they did and which games that they think that they will be best in. Basically, Jerry Seaman, the former head of officiating, says you got to put in the trenches who you want to go to war with. So in this case, we have all-star crews, or, well, that would be for the last three games of the postseason. Better term is mixed crews versus crews advancing by themselves. So just give me a counterpoint to why we shouldn't just advance crews by themselves.
Well, if you advance a whole crew, you might have a brand new rookie on who is not yet ready for playoff football, or you might advance somebody who had a particularly subpar season, and you're giving them a reward for a playoff game, and they might not have earned it on the field with the quality of their calls. So that's the trick of advancing a whole crew, and it just, I prefer the mixed crew plus all-star crew way to do things. The mechanics are so uniform anymore that I don't think that is a situation where, like, oh, the line judge and the headline, the line judge and the down judge are all mixed up because they didn't work together all season. Every down judge and every line judge has the same mechanics and the same duties. So I don't think that's a situation. So that's my argument against advancing whole crews through the playoffs.
And to kind of build off of that, let me just build off of that really quick, is that you say that, you know, you have one crew member that could be advanced with a good crew. You could have a solid official that gets buried in a crew of underperformers, let's put it that way. And what you wind up many times is you'll get a veteran who gets paired with someone who's just entering or is in that kind of, I don't want to say probationary period, but that warm-up period, the first 2-3 years, you want to pair him up with him or her up with someone who's been around for a while to get them up to speed. So now you put a veteran in a situation where they're not on the top crew, but that was the top official at that position. Chris, let me throw it back to you.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I mean, each official has their own job, right? So, and part of the reason we pick certain white hats for advancement, right, is because they are good orchestrators, let's say, of the game. They can manage the game. They can manage the flow. For example, again, in the case of the Packers and the Bears, they can manage sort of the intensity of the game. Should they be penalized if their deep wings have a large number of missed sort of pass interference calls? That's where it goes against sort of why you should have a good official downgraded, right? And I think that's why most of the officials don't want it, because they would be penalizing good officials and advancing, quite frankly, lower rated officials. And that's probably why management doesn't want it either.
And from time to time, and part of the part of what we hear as a reason why is, you know, you have your crew cohesiveness. They've been working together all year. And that's not to say that we don't see bumps every once in a while with the mixed crews, because you are dealing with people that you haven't dealt with all year. You have pretty much worked with a lot of these officials either at the clinics or you've been on their crews in prior years. So you're not dealing with anybody too foreign to you. The mechanics and the vocabulary is stuff that is handled at the clinics, is in the training tapes. So when you say bang, bang, you're conveying a whole mess of maybe 3 sentence worth of information to that other official just in 2 words. That wouldn't be something that you would explain it to a common fan. You would go through those 3 sentences, probably add another 3 sentences just to make sure. And so, you know, the language and the mechanics are the same. It's just that they haven't worked with each other. And, you know, there may be something here or there, some preference or whatever, but you just work with it. And the thing is if you're a playoff official, you should be able to go on the field with whoever is there. If you're that good, then you should be able to do well no matter who is on your crew.
Our colleague Cam had that situation. There's normally crews of 5 or 6 in Massachusetts for the high school playoffs. His championship was a crew of 7. He was a deep wing and worked for the very first time with a line of scrimmage wing. And he worked with or called extensively and talked extensively with his sideline partner the week of the game, and it came off fine. So if high school officials can do it, I'm sure NFL officials can do it.
And so with that, we go into the divisional playoffs, and assuming that things hold true to prior years, which we've learned last year, suddenly, no, they're not, because there was a new sheriff in town who was assigning playoff games according to his own criteria, which seemed to work out just fine. But typically, you would see your divisional playoff officials work in the Super Bowl because it gives them just enough time to get the week off after week 18. Then they have a playoff game. Then there's 2 weeks, you know, the conference championship, then the bye week before the Super Bowl. So it's just a perfect little landing spot to kind of break that up a little bit between the two events, instead of waiting for a month on ice, particularly if you're in Minnesota, and waiting for that game to come around. So that's usually where you will see them coming from. We did see a couple of exceptions last year. And so also is the criteria of having to work 5 years before you qualify for a Super Bowl. That's out. The only ones that are really sticking are you can't repeat a Super Bowl assignment, and you can't be on the field if you're in your rookie season or if you're a rookie white hat. You can get an alternate assignment if you're a rookie white hat, but that pretty much is baked in into the collective bargaining agreement, I believe. So those won't change. And, you know, Ramon George pretty much is saying, I'm going to put my stamp on these assignments. I'm going to put them where I think they're going to work best. And if my second or third year official at the umpire position excels, I'm going to put him on that championship game. And yeah, I'll also put him on the Super Bowl too, because he's just that good. All right. Well, you know, and there wasn't any real complaints from the teams about officiating. So we're heading into the divisional round. What do you see? What do you like? What are we hoping for? What do we got?
Well, of the 4 white hats, it's 2 veterans and 2 up-and-comers. Hussey and Sheffers are the veterans, and Hockley and Smith are the up-and-comers. All 4 of them are very worthy to get a Super Bowl, and all 4 of them would be very fine if they worked it. I would say, just to keep your eyes open about something, if Sheffers is assigned a Super Bowl, that will be his 4th. He would tie Jerry Markbright as the official with most referee assignments to the Super Bowl at 4. There's officials at other positions that have worked 5, but Markbright right now holds the record at 4 Super Bowl assignments as referee. So that would be interesting. Hussey has worked a Super Bowl as a line judge, so he knows what a Super Bowl is all about. And Hockley and Smith would get their first ring if they got it.
Yeah, and if you look at who's left for the championship games, I mean, we're kind of down to we think probably 3 names. Bill Vinovich, who, you know, we all think is an extraordinary official, has yet to have an assignment this postseason, and I have a hard time believing he would go through a postseason without an assignment. So he's probably one of the championship game officials. It also leaves Alex Kemp on sort of maybe the outside looking in, or he could sneak in front of Clay Martin. I think those are your other 2 that could be penciled in for that second championship game. Both have had good seasons. Those are both up and comers as well, I would say, on the grand scheme of things. And obviously Vinovich is a veteran. So it'll be interesting to see how they go, but those are kind of the 3 that we're looking at for the championship assignment.
And looking forward to another championship of a different flavor. We have the national championship game. The Big 12 gets the assignment for the officiating crew. And Mark, we're going to reveal right now who has the referee assignment for that game.
Michael Vandeveld is going to be the referee for the national championship game. He has worked numerous high-profile bowls, 2 Rose Bowls, several other New Year's Day bowls. He also has worked spring football in all its iterations. If he has NFL aspirations, I'm sure he's on someone's short list at the NFL. But he's a very good official. I've always been impressed with him, so congratulations.
And with that, we bring to a close another episode of the First and 25 podcast. My thanks to Mark Schultz and Chris Soibert. You can listen to us every week on your favorite podcasting app. Next week, we will also be posting on Wednesdays, because we do have a national championship game, and so we will not be recording at our usual time. So catch us a day later for the roundtable discussion next episode. Many thanks for listening.